This is The Worth Report. Each week, we'll bring you financial news that you can immediately use to plan for your financial future. If you have questions for the show, call us anytime at 980-288-4022. Now, here are your hosts of The Worth Report, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Good Saturday, and welcome to The Worth Report. I'm your host, Nick Wharton, here with my good friend, Glenn Wright, president and founder of Worth Financial. Each week, we'll bring you news that you can immediately use to manage your financial affairs. We'll also provide commentary on local, state, and national affairs that will have an impact on how you look at your financial future. Glenn, how are you doing this morning?
Man, doing great. I'll go both ways. I'm doing okay. I mentioned to you off air, I've got a friend of mine that's kind of going through some personal challenges, dealing with cancer.
Wow.
45 years old. Mm. It's tough. It's really been bothering me and affecting me dramatically. You know, you just don't think it's going to happen.
Sure.
And it does. My wife and kids, the most beautiful people I've probably ever met.
Mm-hmm.
That's been really tough to deal with. And just, you know, it just speaks to some of the perils that mm-hmm. we talk about on the show.
Yeah. Well, let me just say that I sincerely wish your friend our blessings personally. And I know that this is going to be an interesting journey going forward.
Yeah.
And I wish you God's strength as you walk this journey with him.
Yeah. Well, thank you. But I will say God can fix anything. So we're being prayerful that will happen and that God is with each one of them mm-hmm. during this time as well. And that this is a testimony for them.
It is. I wish you traveling mercies as you go out to visit with them as well.
Thank you. But with that, if I ever need any comic relief, I'll just turn to CNN. That's always interesting on the back and forth on what's going on politically.
Yeah, it's so hard sometimes watching the news, to be honest with you, because you would think it's kind of funny, but it's so serious on a certain level, right? It's so serious, these appointments, man, and then he's going after some reporter or something that he's tweeting some craziness, you know? Man, what are we going to do?
I know. Let me ask you that, because you just had at the Urban League a very huge affair this past week. How was it?
Well, thanks for asking. So we had our annual meeting, and it was spectacular. In fact, we had it in the Bank of America Founders Hall, and we had over 300 people there.
Mm.
These were stakeholders, community leaders, politicians, business leaders, and all coming to partake in a conversation, if you will, an update as well on the progress of our Urban League programs and services and how our clients are faring. And so it's just really, really exciting.
Well, question.
Mm-hmm.
Are people talking about this, the national election? Are people talking about, or are you hearing some concerns as of, especially maybe even that evening? I'm sure you probably spoke with most of the 300 people there.
Right. So we honored a number of people, and I provided some commentary on, you know, the mood, I guess, this sort of misery index that we kind of feel. And I guess part of how I sort of contextualize my comments is to say that this has obviously been one of the most bitter, contentious elections that we've had in modern history. Mm-hmm. And it's left people sort of bewildered, confused, and some people are sort of inconsolable, some people, because they just can't get their arms around the fact that it's not just that he is the president-elect. That's one part of it. But it's the policies and the rhetoric and all of that. It appears that a sizable population voted for that.
Mm.
And that's, you know, disheartening. And so he's not done a whole lot to so-called bring the nation together and you know, just communicate in a way that is positive in a sense going forward. And so there is that. And then on a more serious level, there's a lot of uncertainty around public policy, you know, and I think folk were feeling it. Now, you asked me whether there was a lot of conversation about it. Well, actually, many folk don't know what to say. They're just sort of frozen, you know, and it's an interesting dynamic. You know, there's some conversations, but people either want to talk about it or they don't want to talk about it at all.
Mm.
So that's the feeling.
Okay. Okay. I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's always an issue. I guess when clients come in and they always want to talk about how is this going to affect the market. And you know, so far it's been so good.
Well, yeah. Let's stay focused then.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that then. Yeah. I mean, I know that one of the topics we wanted to have today is to talk about his cabinet picks, and what does that say about the man, the politician, the president? I mean, what do you think? What does it say? What are we learning from about him through his cabinet picks?
What do you think about Ben Carson? I mean, we can start and have the whole show on him.
Well, that's really fascinating. You think about Bill. Well, so Ben Carson, tremendous brain surgery, brain surgeon. However, him as the HUD secretary doesn't make a lot of sense.
Housing and urban development.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, really. Okay. I know he lived in the projects. I don't know if that was a requirement.
Yeah.
But and in Detroit, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so
that's true.
That should mean something.
Yeah.
But he doesn't talk about policy. There's no indication in any aspect of his background that he knows anything about housing. That's really a very policy-driven, technical-driven kind of position that requires deep knowledge into housing issues over the last many years. It's complicated. And maybe he's got the job because it's a job for a black guy. Now that's a terrible thing, I suppose to say. But when you look at the diversity of his cabinet, it's full of white men, right, in real powerful positions. There's only a spattering of diversity. In fact, the diversity of his cabinet, we've not seen it this bad since way before Bush. First Bush. So I don't know. This is not shaping up.
Well, the one thing you clearly he's a smart person.
Yes,
Ben Carson.
Oh yes, let's go back to Ben. Yes, very smart.
You have to think out in the history of the United States, how many HUD appointees in his position have ever lived in public housing?
That's a great point.
So if anyone is going to ever have empathy,
yes.
And understand the plight of someone who's living in that type of environment, wouldn't it be someone who's actually lived there?
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And again, I don't know if that's an absolute requirement for the job. We've had good HUD secretaries, who haven't lived there. But they bring great expertise and knowledge. They've managed cities. They've done, different urban development efforts. And so that has been a more stronger suit, to be successful. But there's just not a lot there. And he doesn't talk about housing. I mean, I've just never heard him even mention it, which is interesting. He thought he didn't have the skills to be education secretary.
Right.
I thought maybe surgeon general. Would have been a perfect role.
Would have made sense.
I mean, can you imagine him, making sweeping conclusions about health? And that would have just been really interesting. In fact, I think he'd have been much more credible.
I think you're right.
So I just don't know about this.
That was my first thought as well. But this is going to be interesting because of that dynamic. We know here in Charlotte that there's a need. We've had guests here who spoke on that specifically, that there's a need for affordable housing.
Right.
There are many different projects going on right now to really establish that.
Right.
Over 30,000 homes that are needed in the very near future.
Mm-hmm.
With 34,000 homes, I think was the number.
Mm-hmm.
That's a significant amount of homes. And then we also have the homelessness, issue.
On
finding adequate housing for people who are homeless as well.
That adds another
tens of thousands, unfortunately. So.
I just don't get how he has any positions. Has he communicated even in his campaign that was even a real concern? I mean, I think he's talked about values. And in fact, I remember hearing him speak at the National Urban League conference and and he talked about values, and I think that maybe he's going to come from that place.
Being Ben Carson?
Yeah. Maybe he's going to talk about, how African-Americans or people living in ghettos need to improve their, values. I know that candidate Trump talked about ghettos, and I've not heard that in a long time. And so his context for understanding, you know, the urban environment is sort of recalcitrant. If you're talking about ghettos, even the term kind of is, you know, it's pejorative, and it's always kind of related to black people living in ghettos. I mean, it's like, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see, you know, how this pans out. I'm not certain.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about his other picks? What do you think about?
Well, I think there's certainly, to your point, there's been a lack of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you were meaning from maybe a racial perspective, but...
Well, economic too. I mean, he's got millionaires and billionaires.
Yeah.
I mean, that's interesting.
And this the thought process.
Mm-hmm.
You have someone who's going to really think the other way.
Right.
Someone who may actually oppose you. Or is this going to be just like the TV show?
Right.
Where, you know, if not, then you're fired.
Yeah. I think that's true. Yeah. I think these are people who don't have experience in the government. And I think that was... one important characteristic he was looking for. But then you have folk who are used to sort of command and control, being masters of their universe, directing downward. Mm-hmm. And these are people who have been very successful and very much like him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one point. And so to put the diversity in context, these are many white males who are wealthy and who are influential. And this is not a negative, it's just what it is. Who clearly, you know, have a certain perspective, right, about how the government ought to be run, which is, okay, we got that.
Mm-hmm.
But what about gender? What about, you know, the richness of this country and the diversity and how we look at the country and the fabric? I mean, then you have Carson and HUD, you know, mm-hmm. and then some ways in these organizations, it's a sort of an old diversity model of leadership. You put the African-American guy in the role that stereotypically he lived in the ghetto. Mm-hmm. Which is your point. And he's like an urban guy, and he thinks in terms of ghettos, not Carson, but Trump. So you put him in that role. And we could dispel that if he had some experience in housing, but he has none. So that leaves bare all kinds of, you know, suggestions as to why he's there. Now, I don't want to talk about this guy, but I'm just saying he does have Elaine Chao, who's got incredible experience.
Sure.
So that's it. I think she's in labor, and that'll be it. That's a good look, I think. She's been there before.
What about the Small Business Association?
How about that?
Small Business Administration, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
So Linda McMahon,
yes.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It pays to pay,
mm-hmm.
is what mm-hmm. it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, well, you know, the truth is she's certainly been a part of a well-oiled machine,
right?
Being WWE.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah.
That one, I don't know what to say about that one.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think? Maybe that is what you think.
Well, what we do know is that she paid $6 million to Trump Super PAC.
Wow.
And she gave over $150,000 to his fundraising mm-hmm. account mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. $400,000 to the RNC. So, again.
So maybe we're watching the wrong bouncing ball sometimes. I think that we, you know, out here, we're trying to just add some, you know, some logic, some basic logic, mapping the individuals, their skills to their appointment. When in fact, maybe the right bouncing ball is whether or not they contributed to his campaign. Maybe mm-hmm. that is, maybe that's what we should really be tracking
mm-hmm.
because this has come up over and over again. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the point. And it's like, here we're saying maybe, right? But you go through the list, you have Betsy DeVos. And of course, you know, she belongs to one of the top Republican donor families in the country. So
Absolutely.
She's the education secretary, right? And she was, and you know, for the most part, she gave, what, $50,000 to a Super PAC supporting Senator Marco Rubio. She wasn't really one of his supporters, right? Which was interesting.
Well.
How does that work?
Hey, I mean, maybe she's qualified for the position. Some maybe, you know, in the interview, maybe she blew him away.
Right, perhaps.
And but you know, I was surprised that Nikki Haley
really
didn't get
that?
Something higher.
Oh, something higher. Okay,
than
yeah,
UN
okay.
ambassador.
Well, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, I mean, she is really.
That's an interesting.
She's
point.
Really beloved in South Carolina. I think she's shown a lot of poise, and what happened with the murders in Charleston. The flag issue, I mean, she's been pretty progressive in many ways.
Right.
So I'm surprised that that was that was the position for her.
Yeah.
I mean, because if anybody's the the shining star in the Republican Party, you know, from what I see, it's Nikki Haley.
Well, it's interesting how he potentially packages people. So you're right. Here she is, was instrumental as a governor. Of course, the circumstances are, you know, happened with the terrible shooting. Encourage her to want to pull that flag down. And so they now welcome back into the, you know, South Carolina's welcome back into the Morrow universe, which is a really big deal. And so she's prominent, you know, in the South, I think, in many ways for having done that on for a lot of different reasons. But
Nick, tell me how you really feel about South Carolina.
I mean, listen, man, you know, listen, if I, as a now a North Carolinian, I should be very upset with South Carolina taking all this business from North Carolina. I mean, my goodness, you know.
Well,
in fact, they even rate higher in education in South Carolina.
Well, they would say you've done that to yourself.
Well, right, exactly.
Yeah. That's a whole other story.
Yeah, exactly. But what's interesting about her, you hit it on the head. I do think that she, you know, has the skills and competency, and the optics of having her in a much more prominent role would have been great. But a U.S. ambassador, that almost seems, you know, like you'd never hear from her again.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like you never hear from again. And she's a shining star. So even in the administration, she won't have as many opportunities to demonstrate, you know, her potential.
That was.
So
that
she's off the side. She's on the sidelines. She's almost like a visual aide. I wouldn't say token, but a visual aide.
Unless you have someone, because the Secretary of State's going to be interesting to see who they choose. And maybe they have it set up where the Secretary of State will only be there for a couple of years, and then you bring her in. But now that she'll have that experience.
That's a heck of a scenario. Help me through that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just that's just what I'm thinking.
Right,
so.
Right. Because he doesn't want to look like he fails. I think that, you know, it'll be interesting when you think about the Secretary of State. Why not just put it in the role?
Well, cabinet members change. You know.
That's right.
The Obama administration, I mean, many administrations.
That's true.
They change all the time. So.
Right.
That may be giving her some experience on foreign policy.
Whoa, this is fascinating. You mean to say, this is good. This is great.
Okay.
You mean to say that Trump would be interested in someone getting experience before an appointment? I just want to catch that. I just want to make sure I heard what you said.
Well, he doesn't need it, but maybe someone else might need it.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, these guys, none of them have experience, man. These guys are like, listen, man, you know, I'm your guy. Now, the Secretary of State thing is going to be interesting because who's in the running still?
Rudy Giuliani.
I know. He's
John
such a
Bolton,
scary guy. Can you
Bob
imagine him?
Corker. He's the Republican out of Tennessee. And Mitt Romney. David Petraeus. We all remember his scandal.
I heard him on an interview, and he was, I mean, he's a stand-up guy.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of credentials.
When was the last time we had a general to be a Secretary of State?
And there's...
A former general.
Right. Well, Colin
Powell. That was
that's
it.
Right.
That's right.
That's right. That's a good point. See, so generals could work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, generals could work.
Yeah. Some would say that did Colin Powell do a good job?
Yeah.
With the whole
he did a great job.
The whole Iraq War.
Well, you know, it's so funny. It's interesting we're talking about that because
Have you ever found those WMDs?
No.
Okay, I'm just curious.
In fact, let me tell you, I remember that whole episode real well, and he talks about it, writes about it in his books, and one of the reasons why, many of the Republicans have fallen out on him because, you know, he felt in some ways he was set up. And I remember him saying to the CIA guy, listen, when I'm going to present this case to the UN, I want you sitting right behind me, right? So the cameras will get you too, because the information I got about this comes from you, right?
Wow.
And so it was a complete setup because they knew then Colin Powell, which is the point maybe you were kind of making, he had the most international credibility to move the UN to make that decision. And they trotted him out there, knowing full well that information was flawed. And that was a huge, huge blow up within the administration because he felt that was just an outrageous thing to do. Mm. And that would have been his singular blemish if he ran for president.
Mm.
That decision.
Mm. It's interesting.
Isn't that something?
You know, it just goes to how planning is just so important.
Yeah.
You know, of course, I think of everything in dollars and cents.
Mm-hmm.
But it just shows how planning politically, planning for your careers,
right,
is so important. One interesting topic, too, was Trump, I want to get your opinion on this, and I've got a couple of things I want to add. What do you think about Trump saving 1,000 jobs?
Now, and, that was interesting. Yeah. And the sort of communications happening around that, because some of the, you know, some of the carrier executives are saying, what is he talking about?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually like only like 800 jobs, and another 800 jobs are actually going. So it's kind of like, wait a minute. I mean, it was sort of like, you know, a sort of, you know, how do you, what do you call it in a card trick game? I mean, sleight of hands almost in a sense, right? So it's like it's really 800, not 1,000, and there's 800 still going. I mean, so what really happened here again? You know, it's a very interesting thing, but he's good, man. I mean, 800 people are staying. They're keeping their jobs. I mean, you know.
That means something.
Let's just be real clear about it.
That means something.
And he has packaged that in a way that is like a major business coup. I thought you might ask me about the Chinese gentleman, you know, who's investing how much? $50 billion, something like that?
It's SoftBank.
Right. Yeah. SoftBank, right?
SoftBank, yeah.
And that turns out that was happening anyway.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I mean, so I'm just saying, man. I mean, it's like it tracks
this
guy.
They've already been doing that and buying Sprint and other companies. Yeah, that money's already flowing over here.
I'm just saying, man. And it gets even better. Since you're on this line of conversation,
okay.
The whole $4 billion with the plane, the whole, you know, Air Force One thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he's saying, oh, that's not going to work, whatever, whatever. And they're saying, dude, the contract is signed. This is a done deal. I mean, what are you talking about?
You know? They've received $170 million
of that. You know, so he's going to stop that, I guess. And so the thing that I think is going to be really interesting, and I'm just saying this, it's in no way does this rise to the level of an impeachable offense. But this whole idea of targeting companies, of selecting companies to go after them and to threaten them is really problematic. I don't know how this is going to play out. I think from the public side, it feels like it's a campaign. Yes, you should stop these companies from going overseas, blah, 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 blah. I get it. But in practical terms, I think it's going to get real, real, real ugly. Because most presidents look at industries to manage, not individual companies.
Well,
you know, they impact industries.
Well,
you see what I'm saying? That's the presidential.
Well, that's probably what he's going to do as well.
I hope so.
All you have to do is change the tax code and you can accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Yeah.
You change the code to a point where it's advantageous to keep the business here versus having huge tariffs or fees to bring that back overseas and to make money or change the corporate tax structure.
Sure.
Then,
I mean, think about how presidents have impacted the oil industry, and they've driven legislation. They've done different things to, ensure, that we have adequate supply, for instance, or we use less or clean industry. They create policies, but to go after an Exxon or to go after, a carrier to go as if they're doing something wrong. And oh, by the way, a lot of his products are made overseas, Trump products. Yeah. So, and he has holdings and resources. Well, he had to bring his money back. And let me make the last point is that he's not yet, in fact, I heard recently this week that he is resisting divesting in his own businesses in order to be president. He says, I'm keeping my arms around this. You know, I'm not sure how it's going to work as a conflict of interest.
It is legal.
Well, this is his point.
Yeah, it's legal. So he can do it.
Right. So the question becomes,
this will be a first.
How does that affect public and international policy? Would you, if you have businesses in Iraq and not Iraq, Middle East and different places, would you support a policy that would undermine your ability, your delivering earnings to shareholders? I wouldn't.
Right.
So this is a dilemma. This is a dilemma that has to be worked out. And I'm not sure that's never been done before. Right. Kellyanne Conway says, well, if the president does it, it's illegal. That's her position. It now becomes legal.
Yeah. There's certainly nothing illegal by what he's spoken of. So,
what do you think of? How's that going? I mean, I just don't know in practical terms. How does that work?
Yeah.
You know?
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, it's never been done. So, So we'll see what this roadmap looks like. They're already talking about trying to find ways to impeach him. So even before he's even in office.
Well, I know. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah.
It is.
It's going to be interesting. So, I know. But before our
high crimes and misdemeanors, is that what it's called?
Man.
Maybe we should call this show High Crimes and Misdemeanors, man. That'd be like almost at Law and Order. My wife and I, we watch Law and Order all the time. High crimes and misdemeanors.
Oh, man, yeah.
Wow.
Unfortunately, there are plenty of them going on right now.
So many people make so much about him having his finger on the button of our weapons. Don't forget, he also holds the pen that makes the decisions in this country. The button doesn't scare me. It's him holding the pen.
The real sword.
The pen is truly mightier than the sword.
Yeah.
Is, you know?
Yeah.
Right, right.
Well,
I like to keep those codes away from him, too, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. No, I don't know. I'm just saying, man, you know.
Yeah.
That's a little scary, too, man.
So, I've heard some economists say, look, he's going to be ultra successful.
Yeah.
By being president, just let it go.
Well,
yes, gonna be a part of it.
You know, so who's this guy? His Krautheimer, Charles Krautheimer. He's a real conservative guy. He's on Fox a lot. I very rarely disagree with him, but I very rarely agree with him. But he has such a clear conservative logic that if you listen to him, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So he had a problem with Trump during the campaign, but now, you know, he's saying what you're saying, that Trump has put in some ultra, ultra conservative folk who are going to move the ball down the lane. You know, if it means exploding EPA and regulations, they got a person there to do this. This guy, in fact, the people he has in some of these cabinet posts, they've dedicated their careers to being anti those departments.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that interesting? And this is what, you know, they've cut their teeth on. And now they're running the departments they're going to destroy. Now, I don't know how that works, but it's going to be interesting.
Well, something in the financial industry, I have to say this, too, is that they're looking at the DOL, Department of Labor, has really changed the financial industry dramatically.
Yes.
So you hear, you know, Elizabeth Warren and certain other people who are all truly, truly liberal.
Yes, absolutely.
Have Wall Street as if everybody's evil.
I know, that's true.
So, which in my opinion just goes way too far.
Yeah,
so,
it does.
But what it's done right now, the legislation is, if everything happens and the Trump administration doesn't change this, now, even if you are a commission-based planner, so you roll over retirement assets, to, let's say, to an annuity, and you get paid a commission.
Right.
Now that has to be disclosed. Before, no
really?
One's never known. You know, it's
so,
over.
So how does that play out on the ground? What does that look like? Give us an example.
Okay.
Where
so,
that's problematic.
So let's say that you have a $100,000 rollover. Let's say you retire, you roll your money over.
Yes.
So let's say you roll it over to an account. It may pay a 6 or 7% commission up front to the financial person.
Sure.
You know, I tend not to use the word advisor for a commission-based person, but let's say that's the case. Okay? So now that's $7,000 that has to be disclosed. If you have $1 million, you know, so let's say they get a 10% commission. Right? So now they have to disclose, hey, I'm going to make $100,000 on this transaction.
Wow.
So it's going to be interesting to see that one. Before, it just never had to be disclosed. So it's about clarity.
Yeah, transparency.
And in being a registered investment advisory firm with Worth Financial, we've been doing that for years on showing we charge by fees on investments and not those commissions. And that's been very forthcoming and transparent, and people know there are a lot of benefits which we've talked about in the past. But it's going to be interesting to see if this happens. It's going to change the landscape of how business is done in the financial sector.
Really?
Yeah. So I know that we're getting toward the end of the show, so we definitely need to talk more about this.
Yeah,
so
I'd like to learn more.
I'm going to keep everybody tuned in on this topic because it's quite interesting.
It is.
Real quick before you get out of here too, guys, we have a new number set up. So if people have questions for the show, comments about the show.
Yes.
If they want to tell us we're doing a good job, bad job, if we're crazy,
great.
Whatever. We encourage all comments. They can reach us at 980-288-4022. That's 980-288-4022.
Oh, that's great.
Sounds good.
Sounds good to me.
Let's do it again next week.
We will, man. Listen, have a blessed week.
Same to you, my friend.
Okay.
Same to you.
All right.
This has been The Worth Report with your host, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. To learn more about Worth Financial and to speak to one of their advisors, call 704-731-0121. That's 704-731-0121. Or log on to worthadvisors.com. That's worthadvisors.com.